Welcome now to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Bucks studio with pianist Stephen Nielsen, who is in Wisconsin, Madison in particular, to perform what sounds like a very unusual concert. He's going to be performing a free concert with Sam Hutchison at the Overture Center in Madison this Saturday morning, 11 o'clock. And I wanted to call it, first, welcome to the Midday.
Thank Steve. You. It's great to be here.
Pleasure having you here. I wanted to call this set up a duet, a duel between, you know, this Uber Steinway there at the Overture Center and the organ.
Well, let's choose to call it D-U-A-L rather than D-U-E-L. I want to assure you there's not going to be any carnage on the stage.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. But a lot of great stuff. And you also have a strong spiritual element to your repertory. There will be that'll be represented here and there. There will also be, of course, A Mighty Fortress that appears in one of Mendelssohn's symphonies and some other places too.
That's right. That's right. And we'll especially hear it millions of times next year, since 2017 is the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's posting his thesis on the door at Wittenberg.
So next year,
that's
oh yeah,
the Reformation anniversary.
The beginning of the Reformation.
One.
Yeah. And also on that concert, and this is not stuff that you usually think of as piano music, the Water Music Suite.
Yes, that's thanks to Sam's inventive thinking. We are collaborating on what is essentially an organ suite, but it's going to be fun for the first time, at least for me, to put that in a piano and organ setting.
You're doing the same thing with this fugue in D by Bach?
Also, that's Sam alone. Solo on the organ, yes.
So you'll be swapping off and then
that's right,
duetting from time to time. Again, that is a free concert. One of those farmer's market concert series, which has been going on for a while now, over the years, and Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, Overture Hall. So walk right in. They have good attendance, too.
Oh, and it's concerts. A gorgeous hall. Really is a world-class place. I was here last year. We did the same thing in June, so it's a pleasure to be back.
Today it's going to be all piano, though, for the midday.
Yes.
We don't have the organ in the studio, but we do have our Mason and Hamlin, and it, I think, is going to hold up well for your repertory today. Some of your own arrangements we're going to be hearing later, things that, well, you can't get anywhere else.
That's right.
You come from Texas originally?
I am not a native, but as some Texans like to say, I got there as fast as I could. I moved there with my parents at the age of four.
That's pretty fast.
And grew up there in Dallas, which is now my home again. It was a wonderful experience. Dallas and Fort Worth, that North Texas area, is culturally very rich. And so I hail from there, and then went away to school at the Indiana University School of Music. And then on through life's map, through various tours of duty.
You had a piano duo act for what, like 30 years, didn't you?
41 years.
41 years.
Nielsen and Young, yes. In fact, let me say that it's a privilege to be playing Saturday on Organ Piano 3 of the transcriptions, which Nielsen and Young co-authored. And so it's a nice tribute. My duo piano colleague, Ovid Young, tragically, we lost him to a long bout with cancer in 2014. But what a legacy. And we played well over 3,500 concerts during those years all around the world.
Did you have any favorite pieces that you like to play with Ovid Young?
Oh, goodness. Well, of course, our hymn transcriptions are so much a part of our DNA. But as duo pianists, we played things like the famous Rachmaninoff Suite in C minor, and Leiterfer and Strauss, and Defia, and it goes on and on. So it was wonderful because we had this mix of rich duo piano literature. All of it, didn't start out as duo piano. Much of duo piano literature is pirated from another medium. But the novelty of duo pianos was just wonderful. And to have that repartee through the piano lids was great. So, how many musical relationships and professional relationships last that long.
I would say, so yeah, you must have had it all that timing and the dynamics and everything just must have come
automatically. We anticipated each other in every aspect.
Yeah, that's a great treat to have had that kind of legacy. Well, you're going to start today, the midday, with a couple of Chopins and starting with one of his many mazurkas.
Yes, A minor.
And a typical Chopin sound, but wonderful to have his fingerprints on these pieces.
Oh, my goodness, yes. He was the poet of the piano, so, and for good reason.
Mazurka in A minor. That piece that gives it that Near Eastern quality. What's going on with that?
I never thought of a Near Eastern quality. It's just so sublime and simple eloquent.
Yeah, there's something about the trajectory of it that
that's
has
right,
an
and perhaps
sound.
Those trills remind you, bring that to mind of that particular part of the world. It's just and I'll never forget the first time I heard it performed was when I was a freshman in Indiana with my teacher, the late Gyorgy Shubuk, who played it on a faculty recital, and I was just smitten with it just because of its simplicity. And that's a piece where you're stark naked there. You know every note is worth its weight in gold, and the trills are lovely but still delicate. So I've loved it.
Bit of a contrast then when you get to this Polonaise by Chopin. That was really his kind of the center of his pianistic soul in a way, these Polish processional dances originally that he rendered.
Well, and they are militaristic, the body of Polonaises, because he was in Paris but was responding to his native Poland at the unfortunate geographical crosshairs of history. And in the 1830s, he had what for Chopin was an uncharacteristic nationalistic fervor, which gave rise to this group of songs called Polonaise with something of a militaristic flavor to them.
This one in particular, though, is called Polonaise Militaire.
So-called Militaire.
Well, one of the most famous.
Thank you.
That's got to be a showstopper, probably for you and for Chopin.
Well, as P.T. Barnum famously said, nobody likes it but the people. So it's just an enduring, iconic piece for the pianist.
Yeah, one of those that has caught the imaginations of those audiences over the years, the Polonaise, Militaire Polonaise in A by Chopin. If you've just joined us, in fact, even if you haven't just joined us, my guest today is Stephen Nielsen. We're here in the Buck Studio, and he's going to be performing a free concert with organist Sam Hutchison, so it's piano and organ, and that's 11 o'clock Saturday morning. A free farmers market concert taking place in the Overture Center and part of a pretty long ongoing series year to year of those free farmers markets concerts at Overture. I mentioned the trills, or we talked about the trills and the mazurka, and Arabesque is all about that, isn't it?
The Debussy, this is Schumann arabesque.
Right.
Yes.
But in either case, Debussy or Schumann, ornamented.
Right. And of course, the arabesque is another lovely piece that's very fluid, typical tunesmith quality, which characterized so much of Robert Schumann's writing.
Yeah. It's, again, I think you'd recognize this pretty quickly as his work, but stands out from his others in this ornamentation.
Could I interject one piece here,
oh, sure,
Norman?
Yeah.
I know you have something on the list, but I want to be sure to play one of my transcriptions, and we may in a few minutes get into why I do what I do and that interesting two hats that I wear. But I wanted to make sure that I play my transcription of the famous Holst Jupiter theme.
Oh, sure.
From the Planets. And what is great is that I just found out from Sam yesterday that the symphony is opening season
with
in September
planets.
With the Planets. And I did not know that before. And so what I did a number of years ago is to transcribe that for piano solo. It's a famous theme. And in more recent years, it also had superimposed on it a hymn tune, a hymn text entitled O God Beyond All Praising. But it's a wonderful piece, and I think gives elevation and enhancement to the original theme. Nobody, I think, had ever done this for piano solo.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not aware of it.
And because I'm a pianist, you know, Tennyson or Thoreau or somebody said, I'm a part of all that I have met. And so when you bring your creative skills to write, you've got almost an innumerable set of figures and experiences from the literature you've studied, ideas. And so when I was thinking about how to craft this particular transcription for piano, it was brought to mind the Dance of the Delphes of Debussy, which is one of Debussy's preludes. And what I did is I bookended this arrangement with brief excerpts from the Dance of the Delphes, and then you'll notice right in the center I bring that little snippet back. And to me, bouncing off the idea of Holst and the planets, the immensity of space, this particular figure, which I think you will and the audience will notice, of Debussy enhances that. It adds to the immensity and the feeling of outer space, the vastness of it. And I think they made good bedfellows, both the Debussy and then the Holst.
I never would have paired them. I mean, they were roughly contemporary, but the styles.
That's right. So it worked to make an arrangement. So let me play that tune, my arrangement of the Jupiter theme from Holst's The Planets. Thank you.
That's a really interesting blending of styles there, Holst and Debussy, and it works on the piano. I'm not sure if you could pull it off orchestrally as gracefully, but yeah, they do flow one into the other, don't they?
Well, and it seemed to be a bit graceful, a bit of a sign that I should do this a number of years ago, because the Debussy is in B flat, and so that made it easy to craft my transcription of the Holst theme in the same key. So
you were getting more and more into transcriptions. And then what are you doing with them? Taking them on the road or
well,
recording them or what?
Many of them are published in books by various publishers. I have a number of solo books out. And really, again, that stems from a great deal from my background. I was raised in a minister's home, and my mother was very musical. And so it was sort of at your mother's knee that I began. So I had this, and she was for many years, the church organist and at times choir director. So you can see that I was, to use the word dually exposed to both the music of the church and also classical music, because my parents were very wise and astute and brought me to the best teachers in the area. So I had that very unique, I think, combination of experiences, and I think that led to the synthesis of the kind of music that I did, and my penchant for a big part of my life being transcriptions of different tunes from many, many different sources. And that has been a lovely venture for me, and I think has been something very fulfilling for me personally and musically.
Well, speaking of transcriptions, if we can get this in the next few minutes, which I think we can, one of the most famous transcriptions is by Dame Myra Hess, who
Of
course, one of a major practitioner, not just the keyboard, but Bach in particular. And she, I think to a great extent, gets the credit for actually making this piece famous in later years.
That's right. She fell in love with Bach's Cantata 147, from which this is drawn, and she is one of my heroes, quite honestly, because during the World War II and the brutal bombing of London, she remained in London, as did the then King and Queen of England, and, you know, so endeared themselves to the British people.
Yeah, she would actually take cover under the piano during some of those bombings.
Oh, and my goodness,
she played there in the front of it.
Innumerable underground concerts, and you think what a salve and a tonic that was for the people with the bombs bursting overhead. So she really is, for that reason, one of my heroes. And she then later created this particular transcription, which has really remained the gold standard for piano solos of this lovely chorale tune.
Chaser Joy of Man's Desiring.
Yes.
Thank you.
Myra Hess's transcription of that tune from the cantata number 147 of Bach, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. And now back to my guest here in our Buck studio, Stephen Nielsen. And, well, we were talking earlier about ornamentation.
Right.
And we talked about Debussy also. Debussy wrote a very famous arabesque, and so did Robert Schumann.
Mm-hmm. Two Debussy arabesques, which are
wonderful
solos, and then this lovely Schumann arabesque in C major. And it's in rondo form, so it has states a theme and then goes into a variation that comes back and so forth.
Yeah, very Schumann-esque in that sense. Yes. You never get too far from that main message.
When he had come up with a good musical idea, he knew how to reiterate it.
Very important. Arabesque in C.
Thank you.
You never exactly know where Schumann's going with that, except that he will come back to that main theme.
He will come back to it.
Wonderful kind of starlit finale there at the end.
Oh, it's pure sublime, Schumann. Isn't it? It's total peace and repose,
yes.
I think, which is so typical of him and many other of his repertoire.
Now back to my guest today here in the Buck Studio, Stephen Nielsen. And we hear a lot this particular theme from the work of Rachmaninoff. And in fact, we hear that number 18 so often. I'm trying to remember how many there are. It's like 23 or so variations total in that Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini.
This 18th variation is far and away the most well-known theme. And of course, it's become iconic for ever so many reasons, not least of which was that the director of Somewhere in Time, a movie a number of years ago starring the late Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. The director had the good taste to sprinkle this theme liberally, and that's a wonderful example of appropriation of a classical theme that gave it a whole new renaissance and a whole new popularity on a much broader level than would have been the case just within classical music circles.
That's true, and we don't want to look too closely at the chronology, the fact that the movie was set in 1912 and Rachmaninoff wrote this in 1934, but it's sort of timeless. So in that sense, it doesn't matter too much.
Exactly, and it's very dear to my heart. A number of years ago, my wife lost her sister to a long battle with cancer, but before her sister passed away, she had asked me, commissioned me to do this work because this is an interesting amalgamation of both the orchestra and the piano.
Uh-huh.
You see, because in the real thing, the Rhapsody on the Theme of Paganini, the piano doesn't play all these parts and vice versa.
Yeah, it's so a handful.
It is a handful, and knowing how lush Rachmaninoff's score was, it was a big challenge to distill all of those notes into piano solo form. So I did it, and I played it at my sister-in-law's memorial service many years ago in California. But it's one of those wonderful tunes that has such broad appeal across many lines, and there's a reason why Rachmaninoff was called the tunesmith, and why this is one of the great cash tunes of music.
He could write a tune.
He could write
about
a tune.
That.
That's right.
So this is the 18th. This is Stephen Nielsen's transcription of the 18th variation from the Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini by Rachmaninoff. Thank you. Another of your transcriptions is Passion Chorale. What's the source of that?
Well, I mean, the Passion Chorale is one of the oldest pieces in the sacred literature, and of course forms the basis of cantatas, and it's marvelous, and of course is sung very much during Lent, the season of Lent. And I just I love the tune, and I, again, took some elements in my transcription from all the other places I have been musically and pianistically, and I just think it's an eloquent tune and really timeless.
And so Passion Chorale, arranged by Stephen Nielsen. Setting of the Passion Chorale, familiar tune throughout the years, and one that we associate, we mentioned this much earlier in the hour, Stephen, we associate it with Sir David Wilcox and those wonderful broadcasts, you know, Christmas Eve.
Lessons and Carols.
Nine Lessons and Carols that we broadcast for many years here on WPR. And one of the tunes that resonates from that you have done a setting of also.
That's right. It's the Harold Dark tune, and the reason that I chose to include this in today's program, just to say, referring to my comment of earlier in the program about I'm the part of all that I have met. One of the great privileges of my life was to be on the artistic staff of the International Church Music Festival for many years, of which David Wilcox was the principal director and conductor. It was various locations in Europe each summer for a quarter of a century. And some years ago, I just happened to ask him what his favorite carol was, because, as you know, and you've just said, how immersed he was in the marvelous music of Christmas and his famous carols for Christmas books and what have you. And he said this was In the Bleak Midwinter, but the Herald Dark, the more recent tune. And so I decided a few years ago to, when I was doing my a Christmas book of Christmas arrangements, called Christmas with Stephen Nielsen, of all novel things, to include that and dedicate it to David Wilcox. And fortunately, I put it into his hands about 3 years ago. And of course, we lost him, as you know, last year. But many in your audience who particularly love the music of England and church music know and revere the name of David Wilcox. So I was privileged to know and work with him for so long, and consider that really one of the great treasures of my life.
In the Bleak Midwinter. That's what I call a summer cooler, you know, in the, yes. The depths of
particularly July. In Texas, it's even more refreshing. As a illusion.
In the bleak midwinter. We can take a couple of minutes of that at this time of the year. Stephen Nielsen, a pleasure having you on the show today.
My utter joy. And I look forward to Saturday's concert at Overture Center.
That's 11 o'clock Saturday morning, free concert in conjunction with organist Sam Hutchison. You can hear Stephen Nielsen and that sound unusual of piano and organ simultaneously and alternately.